This is a recording of a workshop given by Douglas Harding on the 12th of September 1993 in the Phoenix Bookstore in Anaheim, Orange County, California. Douglas was 84 years old. This is part three.
Well, the question is, why is it so important for personal relationships to see that we are built open and not closed up? In other words, let us see whether we're built for loving or not. And if we're built for loving, let us notice that and give love a chance. Give love a chance. Because we see we are built for loving. And we have to get into pairs for this. And it's you two together. Yes, it fits rather nicely. We're in pairs. Now, before we go into the tube together, you're going to fit your face into one end of the tube and your friend into the other end. And I'm going to shoot some questions at you when you're in there. These questions are not for answering out loud, but just for deciding for yourself. Now, when you're going in the bag, why are you going in the bag? Simply to answer some very basic questions about whether we are built for loving or not, whether we're built open or not, what is the truth, not the superstition of personal relationships, but the truth of what personal relationships are really, 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 really like. And this is a superstition killing device. It's a kind of treatment for severe chronic superstition, and a very effective one too. Anyway, you're going in there. While you're in there with your neighbor, don't bother to look in that into their eyes unless you particularly wish to. I mean, it's not the one that's staring. It's not a staring thing. You can pick on any feature that you like. And the second thing is, you're not going in the bag to have lovely feelings. If you have them, good luck to you, but that's not the point. That's not the point. And you're not going in the bag to have insight into the nature of your neighbor there and or see that aura or I don't know what. You're simply going in there to kill the superstition we've been living by and start living from the truth. And so I shall let you out for air, from time to time. But in the meantime, there is some nice ventilation in the top of the tube, so you won't get suffocated. So, there you are, being your own first-hand authority on what is given. And the first question is very, very simple, obvious one. How many faces are there in the tube on present evidence? The second question, it follows, are you face to face in there, or is it face at one end, space at the other? The superstition is that we are face to face in there. Every language falls for that one. Every language, French, English, American, every other language, every language says we are face to face in there. Incredible superstition of the most damaging kind. I say let's give love a chance by seeing what is true, that you are open at the near end for that one, and have nothing to put in the way of that one. Have you? Have you anything at the near end, at this moment on present evidence, to keep that one out with? Are you not transparent, absolutely transparent for that opacity and solidity, colorless for those colors, simple for that complexity, open to that closed upness? Have you ever, ever, ever been face to face with anyone in your life, ever. Is it any wonder our personal relationships get screwed up when we lie and lie and lie about this? Are we not built for loving, built open? Now, just keeping our faces in the same relative position, just lower the tube, and you see you don't need it any longer, do you? You don't need it any longer in order to be free from this damaging, absurd, crazy superstition that you were face to face with anyone. And if we have problems with communication and loving one another, let's try telling the truth that we are built for loving. We are built open. We are built to a superb design, are we not? So in we go again. Well, just a quick one now, a quick final one now. See, this tube is like an instrument for separating material from the mental, or the matter from spirit. Consciousness from what consciousness is conscious of. And at the far end you will see the matter, and the near end you will find the spirit, or awakeness, awareness. And now you can look into the eyes of that person there without any fear whatever, because you can't find, I think, any hobgoblins of consciousness lurking in those two eyeballs, can you? What would they be like? Is consciousness like that, stuffed somehow behind those little black pupils? All the consciousness in the tube is as gathered, has it not, to the near end. And what is conscious of has gathered to the far end. But does that reduce your friend to a thing, a mere object, a cardboard cutout? I think not. You see, isn't it true at this time that what's at the near end of this tube, which is your consciousness, is not your consciousness at all. It's just consciousness. There is nothing to tell you it's yours. There are no labels on it identifying it as yours. No laundry marks on it. It is consciousness per se. It's consciousness which is, you see, is big enough and conscious enough, awake enough, and impersonal enough to do for your friend, and indeed the whole world. In fact, it's indivisible consciousness itself at your near end. One universal consciousness. All of it, not a little tiny bit of it, thank you very much, but all of it at your end. The I am behind the world. Now, can you not say then to your friend that there I have your appearance over there, thank you for that, which I don't have myself. I have your face, having none of my own. What a gift you've given me. How marvelous it is to give me that gift. But as for your reality, which that is an appearance of, I find it right here, because what's at the near end is as much yours as mine. And indeed, it is the consciousness of all beings, indivisible awakeness. Now that's intimacy. There I have your face. Here, I'm you. And how different this is from personal relationships as advertised, as superstitiously set up in the world. Are we not built for loving? Let's celebrate, let's live from this fact. We're built this way and see what happens. Well, it's easy to see this, and we have lots of other exercises and experiments which you don't need, because the thing is clear from any one of them. Any road home is a good road, and we don't need all those others, although you might find them interesting if you wish to investigate, and moreover available for living. But to my mind, in my own practice, this one we've done, the last one we've done, is the most powerful and the most available and the most essential. And it is when I have a face in front of me to notice that I am open for that face. I put nothing in the way of that face. And we are never face to face. I've never confronted anyone in my whole life. And our society, not only our society, the human condition, all these thousands of years, has been built on one presupposition, that is on confrontation, face-to-face condition. And I say, it's time we stop that game. And we have the tools to do it. We have the opportunity now, I think, to save our species, which is playing this game long enough. It's time the whistle were blown and the game of confrontation were abandoned for the other thing, which is not a game, but which is a fact, which is the fact that we are built open to one another. And for 3,000 years, the mystics of the world, the great ones of the great religions, have been telling us this. This is the mystics and the real seers of the world have been telling us this. This has been around for 2 or 3,000 years. I say now is time it was available for ordinary people on the large scale, and not on condition you are an ascetic or a peculiar person, or you devote your celibate, or you devote your life to meditation and so on. It's available for people like you and me. And we have the tools for the job, and I don't think it is absolutely impossible that this revolution should not take place. Just as Galileo and company, by saying, look, change the world, I think we can look again, and change the world again, ourselves and our relationships. Seeing this as a piece of cake is obvious. Keeping it up is a matter of practice. How do we practice it? Simply by keeping coming back to the place we never left and seeing we're built that way. But there's just one other thing that needs practicing, and for me is the bottom line, the essential thing, and that is, whom do I trust? Yes, if I could have a card. Do I put my money, do I trust this little one in the card? You see, I think we've built up our lives trying to make this one worthy of trust. I've spent years of my life trying to get him educated and qualified and to have some something going for him, you know, to have some skills to build up his expertise, even his character, God help me. And I've invested an enormous amount of time and trouble trying to cultivate this one as my resource. And my experience is that this one is not worthy of that. In fact, it's not worthy of it. I mean, this one has no resources. This one is thin. Right, not thin. I mean, it's a picture. This one is a picture. It's not real. It's not real. This is a picture. And no more real than these pictures on the wall. I mean, more lively, perhaps, but no more real. And this one is not real. This is the real one here. But I put my money on that, and if I put my money on that, it's not only a killer. It's a killer when I bring it here. It lets me down every moment when I trust this one. And when I remove my trust from this one to this one, here, this way, I find it never lets me down. Don't give me what I want necessarily, it gives me what I need. This is a resource that I think is the well that never runs dry, and it's trust. And it's not trust in a mere kind of hole in the card, come on. It's trust on the mystery that goes on and on here, the transparency that goes on and on forever and ever. And if I don't trust this, I'm in trouble. and I'm in danger of behaving like an angry ape. Shakespeare. And I'll conclude with questions now, but let me just conclude with a bit of Shakespeare here. If I can remember from Measure for Measure, man, proud man, dressed in a little brief authority, most ignorant of what is most assured, his glassy essence, this is glassy essence, plays such, like an angry ape, plays such tricks before high heaven as make the angels weep. Man, proud man, most ignorant of what is most assured, his glassy essence, like an angry ape, plays such tricks before high heaven as make the angels weep. Well, what Shakespeare's saying is, if I neglect this clarity, this immensity, of which I'm most assured, this resource, this wonder, this consciousness, this being, if I neglect that and am totally ignorant of that and neglectful of that, I'm in grave danger of behaving like an angry ape. And I see all around us behavior of that kind, and I see it going on within me unless I'm careful to keep coming back to who I really, really, really am. Shakespeare. Questions? Anything occurs to you?
When did you start coming to some of your experiences, or that we've heard?
Well, yes.
When you were 20, when you were 30, when you were 40.
May I ask you why you want to know?
Well, I don't know your background.
Yes, dear. But you see, does it matter? I mean, the thing is, the afternoon, as I see it, is about you personally, is that you personally. I mean, it's not about Douglas. Douglas is of minor interest. But very quickly...
how people learn.
Yes.
How they come to it.
Yes. But the question is, how do you come to it, isn't it? Is it available now? Never mind. It's archaeology, isn't it? And it's not only archaeology, it's Douglasology. Douglas archaeology. I mean, I understand. I'm not being rude, I hope. But, you know... It's really a bit irrelevant to who you really are at this time, how long, you know, Douglas's, when Douglas came to this. But just to say so quickly, when I was in the wilderness until about this, until I was 30, until 50 years ago, 51, 2 years ago, when at the age of 33, I happened to notice that here I wasn't like other people, you know, you know, that the first person was different from the third person, and here was different from what I saw in the mirror, and gosh, did I need it. And since then, I've been going around a very inefficient sharer of this vision with dear friends. And it doesn't make it any truer for you that Douglas is like it, does it? I mean, it's true or false for you, not... You know, it's your business, isn't it, really? And I think we see. I mean, we're always looking to outside, something outside ourselves. And the Buddha, for example, says, in dying words, well, take yourselves to no outside refuge. Be ye lamps unto yourselves. You see, to hell with Douglas. To hell with any books he's written. To hell, well, keep out. The thing is, we've been intimidated by all these people, haven't we? We've been intimidated. Let's cease being intimidated and be our own authority. I say that with respect. I'm not meaning to be rude. Well, I think... the main thing is what's now secondary interest is the child, but certainly interest. And my evidence about what it was like being a child is an extremely vivid memory of being as wide as the world and happy and cheerful. And I think all of us have these these delightful moments in our life when it's so clear to us that we were boundless and full of the world and united to the world, not separate. And then you can remember something came along and put you in your box immediately. Your mother said something to you. Something happened and you were in a box. And I think many of us have this experience. And the second thing is, you look at a child, I mean, the evidence is there by the way they behave, the way they look. A healthy child is like that. And I think the evidence is very strong that we go through that stage. And the evidence is still stronger that we block it. And why we block it under social pressure. I mean, I think, when it comes to what we've been talking about here, we have double standards. In ordinary life, we would accept what I presented here without question, because it's proved again and again and again. Proof piled on proof piled on proof. But when it comes to this, it's, well, yes, but, and all that stuff. What is the evidence? Now, the evidence for what it's like now is you. I mean, don't believe a thing I say. When you point there, in the bag, in the tube there, is there anything at that end to keep me out with? Supposing I'm in the tube with you now, which I am in effect, have you anything to keep Douglas and that old bearded guy out with? You haven't. I've got your face, you've got mine. We are trading faces. And this is totally unknown in the world. I mean, this is just not on in the world. It's a crazy world to deny that. And let's tell the truth about that. And if you have doubts about the child, well, put them on hold. Doesn't matter too much. What does matter is now, are we open or are we closed to one another? That's what matters, isn't it?
My little grandson had a birthday party, and he was sitting at the table eating ice cream and cake with two little cousins. So I came up with my camera, and I said, oh, I would like to take a picture of the three cousins. And he turned to me and he said, oh no, Grandma, just two. It was the other two for him. He didn't count himself.
Mm. You see? It's quite normal. Mm. This is evident. It's quite normal. In fact, also I'd say it's invariable that when a small child starts counting, he leaves himself out. And when he looks in the mirror, one or two, you look in the mirror, that's baby, that's not me. This is evidence. I think the evidence is huge, But the point is now. What are we like now? How many eyes are we looking out of? Do we confront one another? When we're in the car, is it Los Angeles that's moving or am I moving? And so on and so forth. Because salvation is liberation. Freedom is in this moment now, isn't it? Now is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation.
Does it get to the point where this particular perspective is permanent, or do you have to constantly remind yourself, and when you don't remind yourself, does it automatically go back to
the old? That's a very, very important question, isn't it? Well, I can tell you, in my case, when I saw this, I say, that's true, my life's about this. I mean, this is so extraordinary, headless, come on, it's marvelous. But, of course, it was in and out. And I forgot it the next moment. I had to keep coming back. But at that time, I didn't see any religious import in it, or even psychological. I thought it was just so interesting. I was deeply convinced of it, but I didn't practice it. It was just true. And I believe when you think as a thing is true, and you're really convinced of it, there's a level at which it's going on, I mean, I don't have to keep thinking of London to be quite sure that London is there, and so on. There are a million things that I don't have to keep thinking of, but it's still fundamental to my life that they're there. Or my friends in England are there. I don't keep thinking of them. And I don't think we need to be too idolatrous about keeping this alive. if we are convinced of its truth. And I would say in my case, and I think in other cases, that there are times when it's extremely vivid as it is now, extremely vivid to me that there's face there and nothing here. There are other times when I'm engaged in other matters, when it is equally true, but it's not to the forefront of one's consciousness. It's going on underground. It's like being in love with someone, which doesn't depend on whether you think of them every minute of the day. Your love is not brighter or clearer or more loving because you didn't forget them when you were doing that difficult piece of business. On the contrary, it might be very appropriate to forget them that time, but your love is still going on loving away underground. But I would say, nevertheless, that in spite of all I said, I think that initially for me, and I think for all of us almost, this seeing this needs to be followed by repetition of the experience till it's natural to be like this. But of course, it's all about being natural, isn't it? And we become artificial, we become superstitious, and we want to overcome that superstition. We have to keep disabusing ourselves of this nonsense. And it means coming back. And coming back on any vehicle, I mean, your toothbrush or your comb or your spectacles, the car, set one of these up in the house. But above all, have somebody in front of you and you see its face. But it does require practice. And the practice needs to be supplemented in the end by what's even more important, which is trust. You know, moving my trust from this little one whose resources are nil to this one, the mystery of the consciousness, the I am, this that I truly, truly am. And that is the big one, absolutely essential. It's not enough to lose your head. You have to find out what you can trust. And this is connected to with the center of gravity moving down to your heart and your guts even. And I say, when you lose your head, you find your heart. You know, the center of gravity moves down. I think a young child, the center of gravity is somewhere around about here. And then we go to school and we become, you know, heady. And our center of gravity goes up here and gosh, we become headstrong and heady and indeed in deep trouble of all sorts. And then we lose the thing, our center of gravity goes down, we find our heart again. Right, Catherine? Yes?
Yes.
Could you enlarge on that?
I don't know if you, what was your experience of the card, but for example, for me, it's very vivid every time I do the card when I see the edges of the hole that come closer and closer and closer, and then when it comes at the second or fraction of second when the edges disappear, just like an explosion, and I really become space, and I can feel physically that my center of gravity comes down here, and then I am actually settled here.
Centered
here. And what I would like to say to answer to your question about how can we live it all the time, I think the more we remember all these way of coming home, like the big window, and the more we get used to that, it's another world. In fact, there are two worlds. There is the world of convention, in which I, for myself, feel extremely locked up. I don't know what you're feeling, but very often locked up. We are separated, we are in confrontation, and I don't feel at ease in that world. But there is another world, and the door to the doors, there are many doors to this other world, and well, the doors Douglas has opened them for us. It is these little stupid things to do, to remember. There is nothing that when I'm looking at you, I'm just disappearing in your favor. I couldn't see you if I had anything here to keep you out. So it's really another world. in which one feels so at ease and so free and ready, really, ready for love, ready for being, sharing with everyone, that when you found yourself suddenly sent back into the world of convention, which happens because people project things on you and then you fall back in the old game, but then you, little by little, you feel so awful. you really, it hurts to fall back into that world, that you hurry to find a way, to find the door to go back to this other world. I don't know if I am clear.
Yeah, yeah.
What happens to the little guy?
He dies.
Well, what happens to a guy? I find my little guy is still out there. Still, there he is. And I think he becomes, he's in his glass cage again. You see, he was a pet. He was a pet out there to begin with, more or less. Kind of yard dog out there, you see. And then he parasitized me here, and that was hell. That was hell. Now, put him back there, and he's a pet. And of course, little Douglas's weaknesses, selfishnesses, nonsenses, stupidities go on quite happily, thank you very much. But they belong to that little guy. Say, there he goes again, you see. But as Catherine said, you come back to who you really are. And I think I need this little guy here. And he doesn't get any better. Richard, he gets worse. He seems to get worse. He doesn't actually get worse. One becomes more conscious of the nonsenses built up around this one. One becomes more conscious of them. Therefore, he seems to be getting worse. But the remedy for that is to keep coming back. So there is in my life, Eckhart is good about this, and he says, in rather Christian language, if you'll forgive it, in us there is... there are two men, excuse the for sexism, he said, the old man and the new man, the old man, the new man, the earthly man, the heavenly man, the slave and the aristocrat. And it's the ding-dong, the dialogue between the two, like the poles of a battery, which I think are marvelous. And if I deny that Douglas still is around and that he is he's concerned with selfish matters, and he is like that. If I deny that, God help me. But he is that's his job out there. He's there, and he doesn't invade me here. So there he goes again. And if you want a chapter and verse for that kind of thing, which is not necessary, Ramana Maharshi, a great sage, was asked whether the ego of the sage ever arose again. He said, of course it does. But he recognizes it for what it is, and it's there, and it doesn't do him harm.
May I add something? Referring to the center of gravity being in the heart, then we can look at the little one with compassion and say some
humor.
Certain amount of humor, and just observe him and say, well, there he or she goes again, how ridiculous he or she is, or how nice, or how, but not be too.
So it's too, another face that you can accept him.
Exactly. We are space for this little one.
Are we really wasting our time, though, with the little guy? Because in essence, he doesn't exist. It's just an image or thought. I mean, we could, you know, you spend half your life beating up on the little guy and the other half trying to glorify it. And the whole time, the whole thing was a fake. our real problem is the inability to perceive the obvious.
Well, I know that point of view, and I understand what's behind it, but all I can say is that I find this is a dynamic thing. It's not a negative thing. There's something, as Catherine says, amusing about it, and the little guy is
for me, extremely real and important in its place. And moreover, I would say this, that who we really, really are, this kind of true head of mine here, the true head here that I find here, is divine, because it has these divine functions of being as wide as the world, being awake, and so forth. It is human, because this stuff here is very, very human, and is personal, and is got Douglas, is a Douglas head here, a Douglas head here. And in this enormous true head of mine, which is a God head, a human head, a Douglas head, combine, these combine these three functions marvelously, and the divine becoming the human, becoming the personal, is just the descent of the highest to the lowest, which I find so incredibly beautiful, celebrated particularly in Christianity, but also in Buddhism, as the incarnation. And it sanctifies the little one. I think it makes the little one very precious, very important. This is not a way of denying our humanness, or even, it's a way of celebrating, I think, our humanness, the little quirkiness of Douglas and so on. It's a way of having compassion for that one, being amused by that one, but also seeing that God has given you somebody to look after, and, see, she isn't ripped off, and kept in good nick, if possible. And in Catherine's case, it's Catherine. In Douglas' case, it's Douglas. Seems to me that this, what we're on about, is not the denial of the little one, but the become sacramental. This the particularity of the highest coming down to the lowest, and of course the great story of this divine descent. So beautifully illustrated here in this no head head here, the divine comes down to be the human, comes down to the personal, right down the highest, down to the floor of her universe, is the story of what happened in a manger 2,000 years ago. I find this incredibly beautiful. I wonder now, I think we're getting near our time.
No, absolutely not. We've gone to 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Oh, I see.
And still rolling.
Yeah, still rolling. Well, I would like, perhaps we could take, is there one more question lurking, particularly among our new friends? Do we have any thoughts? Yes.
Take what you've taught us today into the world, and I just see myself, if I were to do this, I couldn't live in the world that I'm in now. Do you see what I'm saying?
How you take it out into the world?
Yes, and exist in this day-to-day world.
Well, you know...
Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, I love the idea, but I just...
Yes.
I see myself becoming a hermit or running away or something, not being able to live my day-to-day life as I am now, which is...
Very important question. And I think, however, it has a perhaps surprising answer in a way, which is going to work best in your life, living from the truth or living from superstition. And I would say that when you see who you really, really are and start living from that, everything you do is going to be more efficiently done with greater pleasure, is going to be more effective in the world towards changing the world in the direction of love. I think everything is going to work better in your life when you actually living from this. It seems it wouldn't work, but I say, living for a world in which living from the truth is going to be more less efficient, and nonsense is hell. I say, give the thing a whirl and see whether. See whether living from the truth doesn't mean you do a better job. I mean, of course, if your job is a bad job, it shouldn't be there at all. You may be doing it worse. But I mean, if your job is a halfway useful job, I think, which I'm sure it is, is halfway useful job. I mean, if your job were drug pushing, I wouldn't promise this. But if your job were halfway useful, I think when you see who you are, you do a better job with more pleasure and efficiently. My experience is such. Look, I earned my living as an architect, but for strangely enough, I did. But for last more than half century, I've been giving my life to this. But somehow I got it, made a living as an architect too, and how I did it, I never understand. But I was quite successful as an architect, although my heart was in this, in the architecture of this guy, not the building around, you see. And I really do feel, I really strongly feel that the universe is a better universe than the universe which we imagine, in which the truth does not work. The truth works, and it works in every which way. I don't care what job we're doing. But it doesn't work in the way we exactly planned it to. It doesn't do exactly what we expect. But somehow, it works. And I say, give it a whirl. Don't believe a thing Douglas says. Try it out. Well, that's a lovely... lovely question to close on. What I'm proposing is that we get in a circle now. Could we get in a circle now and just bring the thing to a conclusion? We make a little circle now, a very little circle here. And we look down into what I think we could call man's world here, which is the world of change, and these feet are going in different directions now, a world of movement and change and limitation, and of life and death perishing. And I don't see any evidence of the priority of consciousness or the role of consciousness down there. It's a world which everything is depending upon everything else. And we're looking down now into this world. From where? How many are looking down from the top of the circle? Are we divided up there? Down here we are certainly divided. Are we divided up there as we look down? All right, now let's now journey, a real journey, from man's world here into another world. And could I call it, if you allow me, God's world? And we raise our sights to the top of the circle. And we look round and we see faces. And there is something strange about the circle. And that is, there's a huge gap in it. Where is the gap in the circle? Is it not? I'm not talking about what we understand or what we think or feel. Can you not see a gap in the circle? And the gap is possibly between the person on your left and the person on your right. Or is it a bunged up gap? Or is it a real gap? You know, it's the same gap that you found at the near end of the tube. And I say we have a choice now. Shall we live from a gap which is denied and bunged up in imagination, or shall we live from the gap in the world? And the gap in the world is imperishable. It built for loving, is openness itself. It can never come to any real harm. Thank you.
Thank you.